Welcome to the Creating Seal podcast, where we take our work, our guests, and our conversations seriously.
But we try not to take ourselves too seriously.
Our hosts are here to share with you unique experiences, and hopefully it will inspire you and challenge you to make something stellar.
I'm your host for today, Adam Cuppy, and I am at Abstractions, and many of us, but I myself went and listened to a lot of really fascinating talks, and so I wanted to take this opportunity for you to meet a few of the very interesting speakers that I had the great pleasure of sitting in the audience for. One of the first talks I went to was by our next guest. She talked a lot about social anxiety, and I want to explore that with her and how she handled that, and if there's any takeaways that you might be able to take with you, even if you don't go to the extent of the meetup creation that she talked about in her talk, but things that you can do to really kind of normalize that emotion and that anxiety that happens in your life. So I really encourage you to pay close attention and have a good time. We're going to have a really good and human conversation, and I am glad to occupy your ears for just a few minutes. So I want to introduce my guest, Liz. Hi, Liz. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for inviting me to chat.
Yes. So Liz, you've got a pretty interesting background. You've kind of come from multiple different directions. So like walk us through where it started and where you are right now.
Boy, well, when I was a kid, I got interested in programming originally from video games.
Yeah, okay.
And very long roundabout way of getting back into tech later, I really didn't think of it as a career option. So I went down the communications path and started out in that direction, and then realized a little bit later that it wasn't working for me. I was pretty, I guess, bored.
Interesting.
In my job, and yeah. I didn't see myself being happy going further down that path. So I wanted to learn programming again, like for real this time. And starting the meetup group was very much related to that. Like I wanted to make friends in general, but I also wanted to make friends in the context of other people wanting to learn to code and who would want to learn with me and talk about it together. So my talk was about specifically the personal angle, like why I needed that to help me get over my social anxiety and what led up to it. But it's also very much wrapped up in how I got into tech. That's something I didn't really talk about in my talk because I didn't really have time to get into that part. I wanted to focus on the personal since this is already a tech conference, and I figured there's plenty of talks about the tech side.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm happy to talk more about either side of that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So on the communication side, what you said communications, mm-hmm. right? And so what, if anything, comes to mind as like the takeaway that migrated you from mm-hmm. being in communications to being in tech? What was that transition?
The transition really was the meetup group for me. That's what made it stick. Yeah. I mean, I had learned a little bit of programming on and off. Like I mentioned, since I was a kid, like a little bit more in high school, a little bit more after high school, a little more yeah. in college, and many, many long breaks in between generally. And then when I started the meetup, shortly before that was really when I started learning to code again with JavaScript that time and mm-hmm. focused on web development.
Now, were you drawn to web development specifically, or was it more just happenstance with the meetup, or how did that come to be?
Well, shortly before I started the meetup, I was actually learning Java to make an Android app with a friend. That kind of fizzled out because we both got busy with other things. And Java's a hard first language.
I can imagine. Yeah.
we weren't making a lot of progress with that. And I think what drew me to JavaScript was it was so readily available. Like I just opened my web browser and it was also a very easy language to share with other people at a meetup because you have limited times just because of that. Like, we're here for 2 hours. How can we make the most of it? And people show up without any prep, usually. Like, if you've ever been to a meetup or have hosted one, I'm sure you've noticed people often don't read the description. So they just show up.
Yeah,
and,
interesting.
To make it as flexible as possible, JavaScript just worked really well because no one had to install anything on their laptops. They just have a web browser ready to go. So that worked out really well just logistically. But I guess I was also drawn to web dev because some of those early days in programming for me were with websites like
right.
GeoCities, Angel Fire sites.
Now we're getting somewhere, yeah.
One of my first Angel Fire sites is actually still online.
No
kidding. So if you Google the official Fuzzles website, it might still come up.
And the it's official plastered fuzzles, with horrible... like F-U-Z-Z...
What? Yeah, F-U-Z-Z-E-L-S.
Okay, we'll include that in the show notes.
I will say not related to the Neopets fuzzles, if anyone remembers Neopets. This was my own personal meme that I started when I was like 11 or 12. It was just this thing I drew all over the place. It's like a ball of fuzz with eyes and feet. And I called it a fuzzle.
They're very fun.
And I made a website for
that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the coolest things. I mean, it, you know, it almost have gotten... Sometimes I feel like it might have gotten actually too complicated now because I remember back when like GeoCities and all that was really predominant, it was a vehicle through which a lot of people got into programming.
Yeah.
You know, it was really accessible for a lot of folks. It sounds like that was very much the case for you too.
Absolutely. Video games was the very first thing that sparked my interest. But a little bit later, like the web was really what made me want to go a bit deeper and like learn HTML and later on CSS. And when I was working with my Angel Fire websites, there was no CSS, if I remember correctly, or I didn't know about it. So just a bunch of like big tags, like nested to make really big text and then like big small to make just like keep adding more and more. I think at some point I tinkered around with AOL had a website builder, some really horrible app, but it did the job. And I would mess around with that and then look at the markup and see what it generated and then kind of learn from there and like reverse engineer it and then Google all the individual tags and then start to piece together how I could make the website without the website builder UI and just kind of write the code myself. And that was really empowering. Like as a kid, you know, I didn't feel like there was too much I could contribute to the world because I just like did my homework, went to school, right? Like had my little life and didn't feel like I was part of a broader conversation. But being able to make a website made me feel like I could really contribute to anything. Like I could talk to anybody in the world that way. And that was amazing to me. And especially as a really shy kid and someone with social anxiety also, like it was harder for me to make friends at school. So that was a great workaround for me to socialize in a different way with people on the internet. There are actually these web forums for a game that's now on the Nintendo DS called Dogs with a Z. And there's also a Cats with a Z. And it was a PC game. I want to say this was the late 90s, like maybe 1997 or so. And I played that PC game, and that was my first intro to programming, where there were all these tutorials on the web for how to make your dogs like purple or look like giraffes or aliens. And you used a hex editor to do it. So you were just changing a bunch of numbers around. That was my introduction to the hexadecimal number system. And then when I learned CSS later on, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this from that game. And the forums, I think, are actually still active today. And it's mostly like stay-at-home moms playing this game and hacking the game and writing these tutorials for how to do hex editing, which is one of the most like niche. And I honestly, I wish more people knew about it because there's a couple of articles floating around the web, people reminiscing about how that got them into coding and this like lost culture of a very like women-focused tech community, which is... You know, sadly, like especially in the 90s, wasn't very common. So that I don't know. It was. I think it was a really, really life changing thing for me. Like I didn't know it at the time, but it had a huge impact on me.
Yeah, clearly.
To be able to contribute to that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm just curious. Do you ever identify as a creator? Because it sounds like to a certain extent, you had used it as a mean to put creation out into the world. Do you identify with that, or is that just kind of what has happened?
I don't usually, if someone asks me like, what do you do, what are you into, I don't usually say, oh, I'm a creator.
Sure, it sounds
like very grandiose somehow, but yeah, I guess so. I do like to create things. I think that's what made me keep coming back to programming even after these long breaks from it, was it gives you power to take your ideas and make them real.
Yeah.
And for me, I explored that in different ways too, like with writing. I was really into creative writing, and originally I wanted to be a writer, like the next great American novelist, maybe. Yeah. I didn't go further down that path, but it was something that I found really enjoyable to try. Yeah. So programming was just like the other side of that coin, like another way to make things.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
If we could pause for just one second.
Sure.
If you're enjoying the podcast, you may also like to know we stream live most Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific on Twitch TV. Our host, Eric, focuses on helping developers level up. Anything from how to create more accessible applications to interviewing code schools and software interns. So go to twitch.tv/codingzeal. That's twitch.tv/codingzeal this Friday. We'll see you there.
So it's interesting to me, you know, I love how you said, you know, creation sounds a little bit of grandiose, but it's something that you very much have been doing. So I'm curious, we're going to jump around a little bit here. You know, in your talk, you talk a lot about starting a meetup group, and then that meetup group very much evolved, became much larger than you showed, like starting in, I think it was like your apartment living room.
Yes.
Right. With how many were there? The first?
The very first one, I want to say 3 people.
I was going to say, it looked like there was like 3 or 4 people in the photo.
Yeah. And the next few were like maybe 4 or 5 people each time. Yeah.
And now how long ago was that by comparison to, like, how many years have passed since then?
Yeah. So I started the meetup in early 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like, we're like 4.5 years in.
Yeah. Wow. Fantastic. And so now, like, how big has it become? And maybe it's more than one meetup, but I mean, like, what has the impact of you starting with 4 people been at this point?
Well, like I mentioned briefly in my talk, I'm actually still friends with 2 of the people who showed up at one of those first events.
That's amazing. And
yeah, so we go way back. I mean, we don't hang out all the time, but they do still come to the events once in a while, and we talk on Slack. And yeah, just it's awesome to keep in touch. I think... Well, the impact was, I think the biggest impact was probably on me.
Right.
Right. It really, like, solved is, feels like too strong a word maybe, but like it really solved my social anxiety problem. Not that I don't still struggle with other things now, like anxiety in other kinds of contexts, and, you know, my world isn't like all rainbows and unicorns, but that particular part of my life, like, completely transformed thanks to that work that I put into it and the very supportive people I met.
Yeah. So going back to that moment in which, because I loved the story that you were telling, I know that you had some personal tragedy in your life and that really inspired the need to have some change in your life. Going back to around that time in which the self-identification that I need to address the anxiety that I've got going, what, if I might ask, was the real catalyst, the moment, if you could remember it, of, okay, I have to change this now, right? This is either too much of a thing or just something I don't want in my life and I want to work on it. What was that like? Where were we at? Like, if you wouldn't mind sharing that.
Yeah, I'm open to talking about it now. The real catalyst was when my mom passed away. This was in the summer of 2014. And it was right after I got my first full-time job after college. And I was also just generally in a pretty low point in my life. I, like I mentioned, I didn't see myself being happy in that type of work. And I felt like I put all this, I got a degree in communications. You know, I just got started with my career and I'm already unhappy with it. And like, where did I go wrong? Like, how was I so wrong about this? And yeah, just the whole situation for me, like, the personal side of my life, professional, all of it just felt it wasn't right. And then when my mom passed away, that was like the real wake up call. Like, after some time grieving, I, yeah, started to get up my courage to say, well, what's next? Like, what could I do? You know, like, what would my mom be proud of? And just try to remember that and not be afraid. I think also when you go through something really difficult, and I really hadn't until that point, like, I was very fortunate to live a pretty sheltered and safe life and very supportive family. And, you know, I hadn't really experienced anything too difficult. I mean, aside from maybe being teased at school, which is its own thing, but like in terms of, you know, in general, I had a pretty good life. And I think when you deal with something really, really, really difficult or even traumatic, you find a way to get through it. And when you realize that you did get through it, you find you have more courage than maybe you realized beforehand. And I think for me, that was how it manifested, was first identifying, well, here, this is a solvable problem. The fact that I had dealt with this social anxiety my whole life, I didn't know how to make friends, and I was already an adult, so past that point of making friends in college, and not really being too close with my coworkers. And then, you know, my family was very small. So after that, it just felt so much smaller, and my support network was that much smaller. That was when I started to really realize that I was lonely, and I hadn't thought about it in those terms before. And I knew I had to do something about it because I was just genuinely really unhappy at that time. And I think that's when I realized I did have the strength to do something about it, because if I was able to get through my mom's illness and moving on with my life without her in my life, like I felt like, well, I can definitely tackle making a few friends. Like, that is a much easier task to get through, right, than what I had just experienced.
Yeah, and so the friendship side, was there an area, you said, correct me if I'm wrong, but that you had some struggle making friends. Did you feel like you had any friends, many friends? Like, what did that sort of ecosystem look like for you at that time? Was it, I know it felt small, but was it really small?
It really was.
It really was, yeah.
Very, very small. I did not have any friends at that point. Like, none. Mm-hmm. I had internet friends, and that was very important to me, but I did not have any close real-life friends. It really was just my dad, stepmom, and there was one coworker I was a bit closer with, but we didn't really hang out, so I didn't do anything social in the evenings. I just went to work and went home. I was in a relationship briefly around that time, too, that was really not healthy, and even bordering on verbally abusive now in retrospect. And, you know, at the time, I guess I considered that a type of friendship, but it really wasn't. It was very unhealthy, and I think very much because of the place I was in, where I felt like I can't afford to give up any source of support and friendship, because if I left that behind, I wouldn't have any other people around me. And
so it's compounding loneliness, right? It's the compounding loneliness of, I feel lonely because my community is small, or it feels small, might literally be small, and then, or figuratively small, and then, you know, if I lose any of it, it even gets even smaller.
Yeah, this clinging to any relationship that I had. And, you know, that makes them less healthy when you're like so dependent on a relationship, right? So I think all of that was wrapped together. It all happened around the same time. And this was well before I started my meetup group. That was around the time I started attending other meetups, just to try to practice, you know, making friends and doing really small things that were manageable, to at least try. And I figured I would just kind of desensitize myself to meeting new people. And just if I did this over and over and over again, I would get better at it. Just like I did with other skills, like with learning programming too, when I had tinkered with it in the past. There were plenty of times when it felt frustrating and I didn't know what I was doing. And you keep trying and eventually you figure something out. And it feels really rewarding when you get to the next, like, aha moment. So that was the only way I knew how to tackle it. And the part that I was missing until then was I just didn't feel like it was a problem for a while. I was happy with just internet friends for a while, and I didn't have the courage to try for a long time.
So the first step you went through was going to the library, right? And just
I was going to my local grocery store.
Oh, grocery store, excuse
while.
Me.
Yes,
grocery,
that was,
yes.
That was,
oh, right, right, right.
That was like
right.
My
yes,
absolute
yes, yes.
easiest first step that I talked about in my talk the other day. Yeah. Like, it's something that I haven't mentioned to people for a long, long time. Like, I think I only started opening up about that in the past year or so, and talking to other people who had social anxiety and were being very open and vulnerable and talking to me about it, and it made me feel more okay with disclosing that. Mm-hmm. That really was that really was where I was starting from. That was my square one, was go to the store and talk to somebody like the cashier and make that my habit, like exercise. Like, I'm just going to do this every day for a while and see how that goes and if it gets easier. And then I can try more things that are a little bit scarier, then a little bit scarier, and work my way up.
Yeah. Yeah, you brought up the example of, you know, runners. If you want to get into the habit of running, you know, just start by putting your shoes in front of the door before mm-hmm. you leave, you know, and just simply that reminder of mm-hmm. that simple interaction could lead to a greater result.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, what in going to the grocery store, was there anything you were looking to do, or was it starting with just to be there? Because you would go every day, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so you'd go, and would you look to strike... maybe not strike up a conversation, but how would you interact with the cashier as an example?
It was really just saying hi.
Sure.
Usually okay. you do have to converse a little bit with the cashier because they will ask you, like, what type of bag would you like right. for your groceries?
Paper or plastic is an easy answer. Conversation piece, yeah.
You have to answer which one, right? And yeah. that feels, that, to me anyway, that felt less scary because I'm not leading the conversation. I don't mm-hmm. need, there's no pressure, right? There's no pressure to be good at talking. They're starting the conversation. It's like this well-defined interaction that is kind of mechanical even. So I felt like I'm just continuing this, you know, this is just the way it works. And that was totally normal and did not make me feel nervous. Because I guess I knew what would happen. I knew all the rules, so to speak, of the interaction. And I knew the outcome, and the chances of something going horribly wrong were very small, right? Whereas if you go talk to somebody new, you need to figure out, well, what do I ask them? How do I introduce myself? When they ask me any personal question, what do I say? Like, will I feel embarrassed? You know, and all those things weren't really going to happen in the context of a grocery store.
Sure.
So that was a good starting point. And then really just like saying hi or how are you?
Well, and I would
know,
imagine over time they
weekend?
Actually got to know who you were too.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least it starts that ball mm-hmm. rolling. Yeah, I remember I was in the food service industry mm-hmm. and the transactions were very quick, mm-hmm. yet they would compound over time and a relationship would start to form in 30 yeah. and 60 second increments.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very innovative way to look at that. I loved that example because I know that for myself, and I think what I've heard of other people is the anxiety compounds by the perceived risk of the situation.
Yes.
And often it's easier, like I think about this as a speaker, and I don't know if this resonates for you, but I felt this and got some feedback in this regard, that a lot of people would be deathly afraid, or they identify as being deathly afraid walking up and giving a conference talk.
Yes.
Right? But in reality, giving a conference talk is built on little increments like this, right? Mm-hmm. It's attending a conference, mm-hmm. and then eventually you've attended enough of them that you understand the rules of, like you said, like the rules and the constraints of being a speaker. And then that's migrating into, well, now I've found something interesting I'd love to tell people, and I want to help. And mm-hmm. now I have the motivation. And because I'm familiar with the model, mm-hmm. I eventually make my way up to the stage. You know, and then before you know it, there you are. And that the sheer size and scope of that experience is brought down to something much more tangible and palpable and relatable mm. than the vastness of risk that it feels like it is in the beginning.
Yeah, that I think is a really common component of anxiety, is the tendency to think about, just think like 10 steps ahead, like what if, what if, what if. And think of all these possible ways things could go wrong, and holding all of that in your mind all at once, instead of focusing on, here's just the next little step I can do right now that would be totally okay. Or also even, you know, starting to get comfortable with, like the ending keynote yesterday was Simone Gertz.
Mm-hmm.
Her TLDR for her talk was, don't be afraid of being bad at things, and that you can practice being bad at things. And I think that curiosity and willingness to be playful with stuff and make, like in her case, like silly robots that didn't really work very well.
Useless things, as
right?
she called
Useless
them.
Useless things. I think the willingness to do that and be bad at something is the antidote to anxiety. At least it very much was for me in with social anxiety. It was like, and public speaking too. Like, starting to get comfortable with, if I mess up and I have a very awkward conversation and someone thinks I'm weird, or, you know, like, that's not actually so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly working up the courage to be okay with those outcomes, like, you know, incrementally, right? Talking to somebody new at the grocery store, and then somebody new at a meetup group, and then somebody new at a conference, for example. Like, there's lots of different ways you can try different branches towards that bigger goal in really small steps. And it's something I had trouble realizing until I started doing that. I think when I talk to people about public speaking, and it is a very, very common fear, and I certainly never could conceive that I would do public speaking. That was just so far beyond
right.
what I was,
that was
even
five
trying
steps
to
ahead.
Do. Exactly. And, you know, people I've talked to, when they say they're scared of public speaking, a common question is, well, how would I even get there? Like, it just feels so far away from what they're comfortable with. And I think it's so easy to forget, well, you don't have, like, I don't know anybody who's spoken at a conference who just started out doing
right.
that as their first thing,
right?
Nobody goes from being shy to suddenly being the keynote speaker at a giant conference
yeah.
overnight, right?
Or if they do, they're an absolute anomaly.
I've never heard
well,
of it.
I haven't either. I'm
maybe
just saying,
maybe
like,
there's someone.
Oh, yeah, there's probably one person out there, and they're listening, and they're like, "No, I did that."
Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, true. Anomalies exist, but
but still, yes.
Most people I know who've given talks have gone through a similar path as me. Maybe they weren't as shy as I was, but either way, there's still a common fear of public speaking, even for extroverts, even for people without social anxiety, right? And all of those folks that I've talked to said that they started out talking at a meetup or teaching a small workshop, or some people, even if they got more into like stand-up comedy, for example, a very common story there is, oh, I was the class clown in grade school. I would stand up and tell a silly joke to my classmates, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's always like some easier way to start. And yeah, just the more reminders you have of that, and the more examples you have of people in your network of friends, I think the easier it is to start approaching it, right? Because the constant reminders of, okay, I can do this step, I can take this step, and push out the thoughts of the whole scary thing being this one like wall that you can't cross.
You gave a good example of things introverts could do, which was, you know, going on hikes.
Yeah.
and I what I loved about it was you pointed out specifically the beauty of going on a hike with a group of people is there's very little expectation to actually talk,
mm-hmm.
right? For the most part, you're just going and doing a thing together. And if you want to have conversation, you probably can. If you don't, it's almost an entirely acceptable thing
mm-hmm.
to just hike with a group. Is that something you did at all? I mean,
yeah. That was actually a very cathartic group for me to become a part of. I started going, I think that was one of the very first meetups I went to. And it was, I want to say it was the end of 2014. So that I was very much still in grieving mode when I did that. And it was good to just be around, physically be around people and yeah, not have to talk to them, because I felt really, it's like, what can I possibly talk about when all I can think about is like how sad I feel, right? That's where I was when I started going to those hikes. For anyone in Los Angeles, highly recommend. It was the Sierra Club Griffith Park hiking group. And they have all these hike leaders. They meet every Tuesday, Thursday. It's incredibly active. So I could just drop in, you know, randomly like on a Tuesday afternoon and think, oh, you know what? I'll go hiking today after work and just show up. I was lucky that I lived close enough that I could make it there even in LA traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked out really well. And I went as recently as last year when I moved to San Francisco recently, but I went for, like the last few years, last 5 years, going to that same hiking group.
Wow, that's great. That's really cool. I just love that idea, you know, as being more of an extrovert myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, only speaking for myself, like the sense of obligation to be an extrovert when sometimes I just want to be an introvert. And so I love that example because I have felt the anxiety on the opposite side of that, of wanting to be more of an introvert at a time like a hike. That's what I think really resonated for me. Or feeling like I'm supposed to be the extrovert because I am very natural towards that. Yet at the same time, I'm an only child. And so my quiet time was something that was very comfortable for me too.
That's interesting. I'm also an only child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're clearly very screwed up, both of us. I mean, yes, totally different, and right.
That's interesting. Something I hadn't thought about too much was different type of anxiety that can come with being the extrovert. Yeah, I think either way, it's all about expectations, right? Like, I have this role to fulfill. I have this notion of what people expect of me and how they will judge me, whether or not I meet those requirements, and I'm nervous about not meeting them and disappointing someone or, you know, having a bad impression.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that until now. Thanks for sharing.
I hadn't really either, actually. It wasn't until I was really thinking, like, why is it such a comforting idea to go and just not worry about having conversation on a hike? And I think I was casting it aside by and large by just saying, oh, well, that's my introverted side. But when I really think about it, I think it was more that other side of it. So that was good. It was a realization I had too. That's great. Well, I know we only have a little bit of time left, but I wanted to go through your stages of the meetup. So you had three, if I recall. And so what I wrote down was, you know, making friends, and you talked about starting that in a living room. And then the second being offer to help, you know, as a way to really sort of engage. And you said something that I felt was really important, which was you don't need to be an expert to create value for others. That's very resonant for me, especially when it comes to speaking, that, you know, a lot of people feel like, oh, well, I have nothing to say that somebody else would find value in, or more importantly, because I'm not an expert, right? I'm not an expert in that thing. There's quote unquote air quotes here, smarter people.
Right. There's always someone who knows more.
That's right.
About any given thing. Yeah.
And what I loved is you talked about the meetups and moving into teaching as a group and just that collaborative growth was that there wasn't anywhere near that same level of expectation that anyone needed to be an expert in the room, but we could all bring value to one another. Could you speak to that at all? Like any models or ways to think? So if you either run, so if you listening run a meetup group or aspire to do that or are participating in a meetup group, how you could benefit from, you know, bringing value to others without feeling like you have to be an expert.
I like I forget who it's named after, but like the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that?
Pareto's law. Yeah.
Yes. I think, and maybe this is a bit of an unpopular opinion because there are a lot of meetups that focus on content, like having a speaker who's well known or, you know, somebody with some expertise to share, or like a panel discussion, some kind of format, right? But I think 80% of the value of a meetup really comes from just the simple fact that people are in the same room at the same time and can meet each other. I think it's that simple. And it sounds pretty boring as an event organizer to say, oh, you know what? Here's my big idea. We're just going to have people meet in this room. And that's it.
Right.
Like, that's pretty boring. But I think that's the best part of any meetup. And, you know, not just the fact that you're there, but like the potential connections you can make, right? You can make a new friend, a business partner, get a new job out of it. All of those things have happened from the meetup groups that I've been running in LA. Over the years, and we almost never do any content. Most of our meetups are just like networking events or like coding coffee type events where we hang out at a coffee shop and there's no agenda. And people will naturally offer to help each other when the need arises. If there's a total beginner who shows up, everybody else rallies to make them feel welcome and will offer to answer their questions if they can. And other times, if it's mostly experts, well, they'll kind of talk shop about like their favorite frameworks and this and that, right? So the different kinds of value that people get from it. And it's always changing. And yeah, I guess that would be my main advice to somebody starting a meetup or being involved in one and trying to find ways to contribute. even if they feel like they don't have the expertise, like they can't be the speaker or the teacher, that's okay, because it really is as simple as getting people together and just being a friendly host. And once you start to get to know some people, I think one of the best ways you can make the community more sustainable and more valuable is just to introduce people to the other people that you know. And sometimes for me, this means keeping a list of people I know, and like a few, like in my contacts, I'll have, like, there's notes in the contacts on my phone. And sometimes I'll just throw in like, oh yeah, this person really likes JavaScript. And, or this other person, you know, has been in the industry for a long time and is willing to help others. And when I think about it, which is usually random, like I don't usually sit down and say, I'm gonna start connecting people now for the next hour. It's more like as it comes up, something jogs my memory and I'll say, oh, you know what? That reminds me, you should talk to so-and-so. I think you would have a lot to talk about. And just doing that as much as possible in person and on Slack or Twitter, right? There's a lot of that at conferences that happens already just organically. And I think doing that deliberately is a really great way to help other people. There's a lot of value in those connections, right? Like social capital. Right. That is the value in a network of people.
Yeah. And the third point you said, which was, you know, ask for help. And,
yeah,
you know, it's, I feel like to a certain extent, we've cast that statement aside as being cliche, but the reality is that it is probably one of the most powerful things to solve almost any challenge, whether it's personal, internal, or external, is just mm-hmm. asking for help. Another great takeaway that I thought really resonated was, don't be afraid to learn in public.
Yes. Kelsey Hightower wrote that in a tweet. And I think it's something he said too at some of his talks. If you're not familiar with him, highly recommend watching.
Okay. We'll include him in the show notes.
He's famous for giving tech talks at big conferences, like as the keynote oftentimes, without any slides. He's 100% live coding,
fantastic,
riffing on things, improvising. Yeah. So I think he embodies that advice to learn in public. Like if you're live coding in front of an audience, things go wrong quite often, and you have to be all right with that and realize, oh, you know what? I did that wrong. I just learned, not going to do it that way again. And everybody's listening to you. And that's okay, because the audience wants you to succeed.
Right.
By and large.
Yeah.
And I think the same with a meetup, right? It's okay to mess up because everyone is learning with you, whether you're learning how to speak in public, or you're learning how to organize an event, or just how to talk to people. Like I think any time you open your mouth and say some words towards somebody else, you are being a bit vulnerable, and it's always an opportunity to learn. Like learn about the other person, also learn about yourself. Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, is really just those one-on-one connections when it comes to making a community.
Well, I really appreciate it. That's just great advice, I think, overall. And I hope you listening, you've been able to find and extract out what, if you suffer from social anxiety, what you could do, what small incremental step you might be able to do, even if it's as simple as going to the grocery store every day and, you know, taking advantage of the very routine conversation of checking out, but to help build that or lessen that anxiety. So, Liz, if you had the opportunity in that group, that audience that was at your talk, to incept a takeaway, to say, this is the thing I really hope you take away from this, what one or few things would that be?
I think what you pointed out earlier, the one slide, if that was my whole talk, would be the one that says you can create value for people without any expertise, right? It really is as simple as, I can introduce you to somebody I know. You don't need to be an expert to do that. Or invite people to hang out together at the same time and place. You don't need to be an expert to do that either. And that is already tremendously valuable, even if it doesn't feel like it, and even if you can't measure it easily. Over time, doing that on a regular basis and making that a natural part of your work, I think creates a lot of value.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Liz, I thank you very much again. How can people either find you online or get in touch with you, or if you want to plug any one of the meetups you said, by all means, the time is yours.
It's funny. I totally forgot to even mention, which I should have said at the beginning, the name of my meetup in LA is called Learn Teach Code. So it's on like meetup.com/learnteachcode if you're nearby and you want to join. You can also find me most places. My handle online is Learning Nerd. So I'm active on Twitter. Feel free to reach out there. That's probably the best place to reach me right now. Like, I'm happy to give you my personal email too. Like, message me on Twitter, and I'm more than happy to talk one-on-one about any of this stuff. Like, I find it helpful too when people reach out and offer to share their story with me. So I'm open to talking. Yeah, reach out.
Well, fantastic. We'll make sure to include all of those in the show notes. Liz, thank you so very much. I really enjoyed this conversation. I definitely enjoyed your talk. And for you listening, if I know that Abstractions is going to publish all the talks, I believe, on YouTube. When it posts, we'll make sure to get that in the show notes as well. Mm-hmm. If you have not had the chance to watch it, I highly recommend it. And thank you again, Liz.
Thanks so much, Adam. This was a great conversation.
Wonderful.
Thanks for listening to the Creating Zeal podcast. Like what you heard? Drop some stars in your streaming service of choice, and then tell your mom, a friend, a colleague, a client, or someone you just meet on the street. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to drop us an email at podcast@codingzeal.com.